Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
Everything else just sounds like...
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
It's a brand new podcast.
Debate hockey.
I don't touch salmon at all.
That's refreshing.
Pop culture.
I can dig it. Can you dig it?
And more hockey.
I fought a Rottweiler and you got blocked by Ryan Whitney.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Let's start the show proper, shall we?
Hey everyone, it's me, Greg. I'm here at the Omni Hotel in Pittsburgh, PA. Pittsburgh, PA. MVSW for a Monday. It is a Memorial Day in the States. It is also the date of Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final between the Pittsburgh Penguins and the San Jose Sharks. The Omni Hotel is famous for two reasons. First of all, it's totally haunted. You walk down the hallways here, and it looks like The Shining. I'm fully expecting to be drenched by a river of blood emerging from an elevator, or seeing two creepy twins. The other thing, too, is that for whatever reason, they don't have coffee machines in the room. I don't know how you are when you're on the road, but I'm super lazy. So I like to use the coffee provided to you in the hotel room. Especially if they give you a little spring water to throw in the coffee machine that obviously hasn't been cleaned ever. But I like to throw a little Starbucks pod in there and make myself some black coffee as I blog in the morning. But here at the Omni, they do something that's either the coolest thing or the weirdest thing that I've ever seen, which is when you check in, they give you this giant dossier of door hangers that you put on your door, you know, like a room service thing. But what you do is you get a complimentary morning beverage. You can get coffee or juice or tea or a soft drink, which is kind of strange, but I know there are people out there that like to get their Coke on early in the morning. And you check the box. You don't really have to pay anything. You just leave it on your door by 2 a.m. and you wake up with this. Here, hear that? Hear that? It's a giant leather tray that you'd find at like World Market. And there's a little silver pitcher. It's got some plastic wrap on top of it, and your coffee's inside of it, and they give you a little muffin, too, with it. It's the cutest thing, or it's really way too extravagant for what this place is, but I can't tell. Anyway, it's fine, whatever. It's within walking distance of Consol Energy Center, where Game 1 is tonight. So, media day was yesterday, a couple things on that. Joe Thornton, as you probably saw, held court. I was tasked with asking the beard question. He answered it glowingly. Lots of oils, lots of combing, and basically saying that he hates it. It's pretty much the sense I got is that he knows he doesn't look good. He probably misses the baby-faced Big Bird that he used to be with the Boston Bruins. But in really great spirits. And you know, the sense I got from the Sharks overall is this sense of fun, the sense of personality, and as I wrote in my Peter DeBoer piece on Puck Daddy yesterday, a sense that the team finally understood who these guys are. And it took a guy like DeBoer to go in there and be like, you know what? You guys don't want to practice all the time. You guys don't really want to be ground down in the regular season because you're miserable. You got to travel more than other teams. Some of you guys are a little bit older. You don't need to skate every day. And he went in there with that mindset, and it was exactly what they needed. And it was weird because, like, as Patrick Marleau told me, they had to be convinced not to skate. Like, players are so hardwired that in certain situations, an optional skate means you just go out there and skate, impress your coach, whatever, that Pete DeBoer actually had to kick guys off the ice and say, no, forget it. It's optional, but don't take the option. Take some time off. And it's like laid-back Lebowski-esque coach finds laid-back Lebowski-esque team and figures out how to crack the code on them. And it wasn't until yesterday that I really realized that the job that DeBoer did in cultivating that in this team. But, you know, Thornton, really good spirits. I forgot the unparalleled joy of speaking to Tomáš Hertl, the smile emoji that fathered a child with a Furby. He's the best. He's just Leahy and I figured it out finally what Hertl is. Tomáš Hertl talks
with the cadence of Bobby Holík. Oh, look at me, I'm Bobby Holík. I'm Czech Republic. I'm going to play stand-up for the New Jersey Devils.
He speaks with that cadence, but he has Jágr's punchlines, and it's great. It's like it's very much that sort of that kind of woe is me, like thing that Yager does. Like yesterday I was talking to Hurdle about skating, and Hurdle's, you know, talking about how much they had to practice, and he's like,
you know, all we had to do last year was skate, 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 you know, and I was like, oh my god, enough of the skating already.
And I'm just like, oh my god, this guy is a peach. I just want to put him in my pocket and carry him around. The antithesis of that, of course, is Martin Jones. I got a story on him coming out on Puck Daddy today, and I really wish that he gave me more to work with. That dude is locked in. He's focused. He's a goalie. He is someone who is not going to give you too much to work with. But, you know, playing well, and it should be interesting to see what happens with him and Matt Murray. On the Penguins side, Patrick Hornqvist continues to be the best quote in the room. Really fun guy to talk to, really head on straight, had some interesting things to say about Kessel and his time in Toronto that I got coming up in a story. Kessel himself was Phil. I mean, he's never not going to be Phil. And kind of said, you know, yeah, is what it is, when asked about the USA snub. I get into that a little bit. I think Elliot Friedman and I talked about it in our segment coming up, previewing the Cup Final. But in case we didn't, the sense I get is that it was Blake Wheeler being chosen was the reason Kessel didn't get on the team. They kind of saw that being the slot for him. I just vehemently disagree with the way this team is constructed. I mean, it's pretty obvious that there's a lot of playing favorites here. I mean, Jack Johnson makes the team because he plays for Tortorella and because Dean Lombardi loves him. You know, Ryan Callahan, Brandon Dubinsky. I mean, these are guys that are obviously Tortorella foot soldiers from the past. And now in Dubinsky's case, plays for him again. It's just disappointing. Like, it's disappointing that when you look at what Team USA is and what they do on a national, on an international level when it comes to these kinds of tournaments, it always seems to be geared towards, let's build a team that can beat Canada 1-0. Let's see if we can squeeze out a goal and then hope that Corey Schneider shuts him out. And that's just that's the wrong way to do it. Because you know what? Even if that is your plan, you still need a guy who's going to score you a goal. And Phil can score you a goal. Like, the idea that your most talented players, Phil Kessel, Tyler Johnson, whomever, your most talented offensive players are going to be put on the sideline for whatever reason, out of politics, out of familiarity, out of looking back at the 96 World Cup team for inspiration, which was one of the things that came out of this stuff. With due respect to the gentlemen who run this team, Dean Lombardi and Holmgren and all them, and Brian Burke, special advisor, I just don't get it. I don't get how, you know, you look at this Team USA for the World Cup and be like, yeah, for this tournament, it's the way to go. I just don't get it. But anyways, I'm just a bitter American who's looking at arguably the you know, two of the top five players of on his team being unable to compete because they're too young. So there you go. Phil was great. Chris Kunitz is a really good talker, and he's also having an amazing postseason. And I think that deserves a little bit more notice. You know, you look at the possession stats for the Kunitz Malkin line; they're off the charts. They've been the best line statistically for the Penguins in the last series, all due respect to the HBK line. So that's one to watch as well, and he was just a prince. And then the other thing I noticed too is one of the greatest things about the NHL, or in some cases great in the sense that everything ties together in a universal way, but kind of, you know, a little scary in the sense that it's such a small pool we're all swimming in. But Pete DeBoer got his first coaching job from Jim Rutherford. He coached the Detroit Whalers junior team, and Jim Rutherford at the time was the top of the food chain, and DeBoer was hired to coach that team. Mike Sullivan, as a rookie, played with Doug Wilson, who at that time was captain of the San Jose Sharks. And Mike Sullivan coached and played with Joe Thornton, who, of course, now is the deposed captain of the San Jose Sharks. It is a small little world out there in hockey land, and it's always interesting to see how these things tie together. Anyway, in case it's not explicitly stated in the upcoming interview with Elliot, I'm taking the Sharks in six. I like the depth overall for the Sharks. I think they're the only team in this league right now that might be able to match the Penguins as far as depth at forward. Especially with Kessel, Crosby, and Malkin all split up on different lines, but also I think that they're the two top defensive pairings for the Sharks, Vlasic and Braun and Burns and Martin are both really good. And I think what you're going to start to see in this series is the loss of Trevor Daley hurting, and maybe that third defensive pairing for the Penguins being a bit more victimized by the Sharks than they've been by other teams. So you've got that to look out for. And then, you know, overall, if the Sharks get another series in which Thornton, Couture, Pavelski, Marleau, Burns are all at the top of their game, and Jones gives them adequate goaltending, or Reimer gives them adequate goaltending, then I think, you know, they're going to win any series they're in. It's just it. Like, if those guns are all firing, they're going to win any series they're in, and I think they will. And the other thing about the series, too, offensively, is that the Penguins were very, very good at staying out of the penalty box in the previous series against the Tampa Bay Lightning. I don't think they're going to be able to do the same thing here, because I think the Sharks' offensive push and their ability to possess the puck just naturally leads to having more power play opportunities. And, you know, they're second in the NHL right now in the postseason for power play chances. They were fifth in the NHL during the regular season. This team gets power plays. And when they get power plays, they usually score on power plays because they are that damn good. So I don't like to usually base a pick on special teams, and especially on the power play, because that thing can run so hot and cold, and you never know what kind of opportunities you get. I've learned this the hard way covering the Washington Capitals for many years. But I think that the Sharks are going to get their chances and convert their chances. And they've also been so damn good on home ice, too. So Sharks in six is the pick. When we get back from Elliot's interview, a little bit more. But right now, and I thank the man for his time and his graciousness to squeeze me in his super tight schedule here in Pittsburgh. Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet, breaking down the final and some other stuff. Elliot Friedman, here we are, the Stanley Cup Final, yet again. Here we are watching Sidney Crosby, yet again, for the first time in several years. Mm-hmm. How do you break down this series? Oh my God, it's going to be so much fun, a lot of skating.
A long series.
You think so?
Yeah, I do. I think we're going six or seven. I just can't see even one team losing four straight times in overtime. I don't see it. I think that they're so evenly matched. I think the Sharks are a little bit deeper. They both have great players playing at the elite of their abilities right now. But six or seven, I think we're going. And I think those of us who are covering it better get used to a lot of cross-country travel.
But that's the thing about it, too. Like, I was thinking about, to me, one of the greatest things about this Penguins team is you have a line with Sid, you have a line with Gino, you have a line with Phil.
Yeah.
And there are very few teams in this league that can match that depth, except maybe San Jose.
Except maybe you got a line with Thornton.
Yeah,
you got a line
with Couture,
and even their third line's been really good. I mean, Ward has been—he's not on the same level as those other guys,
but
he's a huge playoff player. He's had huge moments in big games. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I think that they have that Pittsburgh doesn't have is Burns.
Yeah,
and the other thing they have that Pittsburgh doesn't have is Vlasic.
Right.
Letang, I shouldn't say that. I think Vlasic and Letang are same level guys.
Burns has had a better playoff,
but Burns has become to me the X factor now.
Yeah,
like, I'm looking at NHL teams, and I'm wondering, I was having this conversation with someone, are there any other forwards that could be converted back to defensemen to be what Brent Burns is?
Yeah.
And so far, I haven't really gotten much of an answer.
It's a unique skill set.
But I think you're going to see that, because, you know, we know this is a copycat league.
Mm-hmm.
Could you see more players?
Brutal.
Yeah. You know, could you see more players become Brent Burns?
Yeah. Well, we had the Bufflin thing.
Yes.
And that was an interesting thing that kind of worked.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's also one who went from being a pretty good forward to being a much better defenseman.
Yeah, but he started initially
as a defenseman. Right. And
so
Burns,
he was moved
Burns
up
was
and
the,
moved back.
Yeah,
yes.
Never played.
So, but, you know, it's interesting. I wonder if, like, teams are going to look and say, is there a Brent Burns we can create for ourselves?
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody can grow a beard like he does. But,
well, copycat league, though, like, my hope is that this being a copycat league, now everybody skates. And that's the one thing you can say about these two teams. They skate like crazy. They're so fast.
Well, I think everybody does skate.
Yeah.
Like, you even look at Toronto, which finished 30th.
Yeah.
They skate.
Yeah.
The problem is, do you have the players that these guys
but
have.
But even stylistically, though, like Babcock system isn't Sullivan's system.
No, it's
like,
not.
They go for it. Mm-hmm. They go for it more than other teams do, mm-hmm. and that's what I'm hoping is aped.
You know, to me, it's not about. I think the one issue I have with that is that everybody thinks that you should do that, but not everybody's got one line with a Crosby, one line with a Malkin, and one line with a Kessel. And Mike Sullivan can coach that way because he knows he's got a team that he can do that with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now we're looks like we're going to have an expansion here. I think we're all expecting one more team coming in. I think it's going to become even harder for guys because they're going to make that Vegas team good. Assuming Vegas comes in, I think we all believe it will. That's going to be a good team. They're not letting people throw the dregs of humanity into the Las Vegas Black Knights. So I think it comes down to who's got the horses to play that way. San Jose sure does.
Yeah.
Tampa sure does. Pittsburgh sure does. The top teams sure do. Can we get it to a point where everybody can play that way?
You've covered Sid for a long time, and I think there's now maybe... It's interesting. At the same time, I think he gets more criticism now than he ever has. Because I thought he straight up got the Ovechkin treatment in the previous rounds of getting criticism laid on him when it's not on
him.
Ready
to run him out of town.
I know, right? But he's also, I think there's been so much more of an appreciation of who he is, what he does, work ethic, everything else, outside of maybe some circles. Where are you on Sid?
I'm pro-Sid. I'll tell you a story. When I used to cover baseball, Carlos Delgado once had like an explosion to me when he played for the Jays. And he once said to me that all you guys think leadership is going into a room and yelling at people and saying, play better. He says, you know what I think leadership is? And I said, what? He goes, I think it's coming to prepare to play every day and preparing to play and always being in the right condition to play and working hard and leading on the field. And I think that's the kind of leadership that Sidney Crosby believes in, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much he yells at guys. I don't see him doing it a lot. But I think that his leadership is, I'm always in shape to play, I'm always in prepared to play, and I'm going to deliver. And I think he has. You know what I see when I watch Crosby, Greg? I was watching his last couple dominant shifts in Game 7 and how they couldn't get the puck off him and it was in the Tampa zone. And I was thinking, I don't know who I feel worse for, him or us, probably him, that we got robbed of seeing two of his years in his prime.
It's true.
Like, that to me is the problem. People rip on Sidney Crosby because we lost 2 years of him in his prime.
Yeah.
And if he had been able to play instead of being injured, my belief is nobody would be ripping Sidney Crosby.
Kunitz said something today that I've always appreciated about Sid, and it goes back to when he was a rookie through now, which is that he's always fine-tuning. He's always picking a part of his game that doesn't work and making it better. I remember when he couldn't win a face-off.
Yeah.
And then he taught himself how to win face-offs.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always really appreciated about him. And I feel like that's a facet of that leadership. It's like if you see the best player in the world not resting on his laurels, like that just permeates through the lineup.
We, at Hockey Night, at the beginning of every year, we used to do a sit-down with Sid.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always one of the questions I asked him was, what did you work
what
on
you working
this
on?
Summer? And face-offs was one.
Yeah.
And I remember one year he was taught, he said, become less predictable on the attack. People think they know where I'm going to pass it to or they know where I'm going to shoot it to. I think one year he changed his sticks a little bit and then he went back. And then I think they told him to stop answering that question, so he won't answer it anymore. But I do believe he's one of those guys. Like, he's one of those guys that always says, how am I going to make myself better? I'm going to work. Like, there's one superstar player in the NHL. I'm not going to say who it is. But, like, I used to say to him every year, what did you work on this summer? And he would say, nothing. And I thought he was just blowing me off.
Yeah.
And then one of his teammates said to me, no, he's so lazy. He's actually not working on anything. He gets by on talent. The best line I always heard about Crosby was, he's a superstar with the attitude of a fourth liner.
Yeah.
And I still think he's that guy.
The other thing on the other side, too, as far as like new appreciation, is Thornton. Like, it makes me so happy that a guy who I think was a Hall of Famer to begin with and is arguably the best passer of the last 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
But now there's that extra level of validation and there's that extra bit of spotlight on him. So now we finally get the Joe Thornton love fest.
Yeah, Yes.
I know. And that makes me happy.
You know what? My line about Thornton right now is he's like your 90-year-old grandmother who decides she doesn't care what anybody thinks anymore.
Yeah. But mine would be racist. But you mean something different.
Yes. No, I don't mean, you know, no. It's just, as far as, no, I don't think he's saying anything racist. That's pretty good. I mean, it's more like, it's more like, you know, I don't care what anybody thinks about me anymore. Yeah. I'm too old to care.
Yeah.
And in hockey age, that's where Joe Thornton is.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know, you suffer your low moment, you lose that series to the Kings, and then you miss the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And last year you blow up at your GM.
Mm-hmm.
And he's finally reached the point where he's like, I don't care anymore. I'm just going to love it.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes I wish we could all do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, we have to free ourselves from the criticism or what other people think or the pressures. And we just have to say, this is my craft. And I'm going to enjoy it.
So you think,
and he's that guy.
You think it was a mass awakening then? There's something attitudinal that's different about this team.
Yes.
I can't put my finger on it.
Well, I think there's a couple of things. Number one, it's that, you know, they needed changes after last year.
Right.
Like, you know, they'd been, like, people are ripping. Todd McLeod leaves. Peter DeBoer comes in. He must have been the problem. I don't buy that.
No.
I think a coach has been somewhere for a decade. Sometimes you just need a new voice. But they went out and they got four players who all contributed. Doug Wilson hit four home runs, but those were Jones, Martin, Ward, and Donskoy.
Yeah.
And I think what happens is, and Bruce Boudreau was a guy earlier in the year, he told me, he said, watch out for San Jose. They're really good. And finally that team began to believe they were good. And I think DeBoer, he knows how to push. Like, I don't think it's a coincidence that he goes into New Jersey and takes them from out of the playoffs to the Stanley Cup final, and he comes into San Jose and does the same
and comes thing. Into Florida and gets them, I think, close to the playoffs?
Yeah.
In that first year, too.
He didn't have the horses.
Right, yeah.
But I think that's a guy who knows how to. He's got an ability to say, this team is at the bottom. Here's how I'm going to bring them to the top.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And, you know, like, it's like they're good. They're funny guy. Like, Burns, hilarious guy.
Yeah.
Pavelski's a very decent guy. Like, I just think that they got a lot of guys there who like life.
Yeah. And maybe, like you said, they had to bottom out to get there.
I think it also helps that they're in San Jose.
Yeah.
I don't know if this happens if they're in Toronto or Montreal.
Right.
They're a little bit off the map. And I think it allows you to bond without the pressure.
Yeah. And Pavelski becoming captain, I think, is a big thing, too.
You know, I do agree with that. And I'll tell you, Greg, you know where it really hit for me was with what pros those two guys are, Burns and Pavelski, was the All-Star game.
Yeah.
So Friday night, we're all out and we're all getting blitzed, all the reporters.
Damn right.
Probably a lot of the players.
High five.
And then, you know, who's skating on Saturday morning? Larkin was there,
mm-hmm.
Dubnyk was there, and Burns and Pavelski were there.
Yeah.
With their kids.
Yeah.
So I'm always interested in that. And the other thing, too, is someday, and I don't know if it's going to be in the John Scott movie, but we're going to find out what the total role of what Burns and Pavelski was. And I think they drove that bus.
Insofar as smoothing.
Making sure that Scott was comfortable.
Yeah.
This is how it's going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really believe.
That was the first thing I saw. The first thing I saw was that picture they took of him in the hotel hallway. And I'm like, oh, okay. Now, this is kind of the stamp that says maybe it's going to be okay that he's here and doing this, and others will follow suit.
I don't think, you know, I wrote something in 30 Thoughts after that weekend was over, and like, my son's four, and we're teaching him skating now, and he hates it. Like, he hates skating. But, you know, I said to him, you got to do it for a year,
yeah.
And we'll see where we go.
Yeah.
Like, that was what convinced me that I want my kid to try to play hockey. I don't know if he will, but because something happened that weekend where those guys made sure that he was taken care of. Like, we all know that first goal, they set it up.
Of course. Yeah.
But the fact that they did that and they made sure, and I think Burns and Pavelski were at the leadership of that,
mm-hmm.
and I think that taught me a lot about who those guys were and who are the kinds of, like, the leaders in the Sharks now.
All right, let's break it down to keys now.
Yeah.
Keys in the series, obviously. I think the speed thing's interesting because I think the Penguins are legitimately fast. They've been running track all year.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if the Sharks seem faster than they are because of whom they played. It's pretty easy to look fast against the Kings. I think it's easy to look fast against the Blues too.
And there were some times they were exposed against Nashville.
Yeah.
Like, there were a couple games, I think it's games 5 and 6,
yeah,
where Nashville skated rings around them. I think that the Sharks, to me, they're smart.
Mm-hmm.
I think that those third and fourth lines don't get a lot of credit. Like, Chris Turney has become
has been a real Johnny on the spot.
Has been a real revelation to me. I think they can deal with this.
Yeah.
I think the Sharks' biggest advantage is their depth. Mm-hmm. And I think between the Penguins, if you're going to say the Penguins have a slight speed edge, I'm going to say the Sharks have a slight depth edge, which will negate that.
And I also think the other interesting thing is, too, that you have a team that doesn't get called for penalties against one of the best postseason power plays we've seen in a long time.
And that's what undid the Blues at the end.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I think if the Penguins are disciplined and they stay out of the penalty box,
they were great.
It gives them fantastic.
Yeah.
It gives them a much, much better chance. Like St. Louis lost it for a couple minutes, and San Jose knocked them out of the playoffs.
We pause on St. Louis for a second before we get to a prediction.
Yeah.
What did you make of Tarasenko not speaking on Media Day?
You know, I think sometimes fans listen to that stuff and they say, media members whining that a guy won't talk to them. The one thing I've always learned is it's not the media who cares necessarily, it's the other players.
Yeah.
They stand out there and they say, why am I answering for this if that guy won't?
Yeah. Like after Game 5 of the Penguin series when Bo Bennett had to answer for losing that game.
Right. You know, I mean, if a guy's talked for 27 straight days and he doesn't talk.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
I get it. But I would be very curious to know what the other Blues players think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do they have a problem with Tarasenko not showing up? To me, the biggest question about St. Louis is Ken Hitchcock going to be coaching them next year?
Yeah.
And I guess we'll find out on Tuesday when they meet with the media what their plans are. You know, his contract's up.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that if you look at Tarasenko in these playoffs, when you're the biggest salary guy, you probably get more credit than you deserve and more blame than you deserve.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a team that is probably going to be looking at general manager Doug Armstrong, for as well as they played, one of the biggest questions he's looking at is, we got this far without our most talented player being a factor after the first round.
Yeah.
He was awesome against Chicago, very limited playing time.
Yep.
How are we going to solve that? Because we can't have this guy being like that. And is there a way we can fix it?
On top of Backes, on top of Brouwer. I think I got some decisions there. All right.
Yeah, and Shattenkirk, too.
Yeah, the perpetual Kevin Shattenkirk trade watch.
You know why? I'll tell you this. I don't know if he listens to this, but I've become a lot more careful about my Kevin Shattenkirk predictions because I understand he listens and he reads and it drives him crazy.
Really?
Yeah, so, Kevin, if you're listening to this, I will say this. I've tried to become a lot more careful because I know what affects him.
One more thing before prediction. What did you think? As an American, I'm a little upset about the direction of my World Cup team in the sense that I feel like they want to win every game 1-0.
I was surprised at Kessel.
Yeah.
You know, we did a World Cup show on Friday afternoon. I said that. Especially since Joe Thornton 3 months ago, nobody was putting him on Canada's team.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw how he played in the playoffs and they put him on, which I was glad to see.
The sense I got was it was going to be Wheeler or Kessel, and once they took Wheeler, then Kessel was out of the mix.
You know, the thing I don't get about that is that I look at Phil Kessel and I say, that World Cup team is perfect for him.
Yeah.
He's not going to have to carry the mail. It's just like the Penguins.
Yeah.
Everybody goes to Crosby, then there's Malkin, then there's Letang. Kessel can just be Kessel.
Which is what happened in Sochi.
I think that he would be, I think he should have been on the team. I would have put him on the team. But I think what that says to me is two things, Greg. Number one, I think there was a lot of fallout from that Sochi team. I think there were a lot of cliques and guys didn't get along. And,
mm-hmm.
and Kessel is probably taking the hit for that.
Yeah.
And number two, and I'm not always comfortable making these comments because I'm way out of shape myself. But I'm sure that there were probably people who said, you know, what's he going to be like in September?
Right.
And I'm sure that was a factor. But if it was, again, I'm uncomfortable saying that because I don't like commenting on other people's physical condition because you can look at my own. But I just, I wonder if that was an issue. But if I was picking Team USA, he's on my
team. That's a whole other issue. Like, I talked to a bunch of guys at the beginning of this previous season about how does your training change?
Yeah.
It's a big deal to have to all of a sudden play in competitive games in September for these guys.
Absolutely.
I mean, you think about how like Bufflin would show up to camp, you know? It's like, what do you? How does a guy like that change life if he had to get ready for the World Cup?
I think you just tell these guys do what you normally
do. What you normally do.
You know, it's funny. You see John Scott's Instagram post.
Yeah, the outlaw team.
The outlaw team. Yeah.
But I guess what bothers me is that as an American, like, one of the issues with Sochi, one of the issues with a lot of international tournaments is goals.
Yeah.
Just get guys like the Bobby Ryan issue last time. Mm-hmm. Get guys who score.
Mm-hmm.
Put them on the team. Who cares? Don't give me the structure. Don't give me this Tortorella stuff. I mean, obviously the strength of the team's in goal. It's the best part of the team.
Mm-hmm.
And they still think that the only way they're ever going to beat Canada, because it's all about beating Canada, is 1-0 with a fluke bounce and Corey Schneider pitching a shutout. Like, that's it. That's the formula they have. And as an American, I'm just like angry about it.
Well, I would say if you're that angry about it, make your feelings heard. But I was shocked at Newcastle. I really thought he deserved to be there.
All right. We've prolonged this enough.
Yeah.
What's your prediction for the Stanley Cup final?
Have you not seen my bracket?
No, I haven't.
It's horrendous.
So's mine. Yeah. I had the Ducks here.
Yeah, I think I had the Ducks Washington.
I had Pittsburgh here, though.
Oh, that's good.
I believe
that's
in the Penguins.
That's better than me.
It's more like I didn't believe in the Capitals.
I'll go Sharks in seven.
I'm gonna go Sharks in six.
Okay.
But why do you like the Sharks?
I just think they're a little bit deeper, and I think that's gonna make a difference here.
Mm-hmm.
If you've watched them in every series as it's gone on, the Kings, they got better. Nashville, they dipped. Nashville almost stole that series for them until they put a great game seven. St. Louis, remember, the last couple games were brilliant. In mm-hmm. most cases, as these series have gone on, they have been the better team.
Yeah. I like them. I like them for those reasons. I worry a little bit about Murray. Just a little bit. I wonder if we're going to have another Fleury Murray thing at some point.
But you know what? I think now that you've done it once in Pittsburgh, everybody's comfortable with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I don't think people are going to bat an eye at
no.
it. I mean, we will, because that's what we do.
Right,
we make,
right.
We make craziness out of everything.
But
I don't think they will.
I think their depth can handle the Penguins. And I also think that, and I've watched a lot of the Sharks this year mm-hmm. in the postseason. They're a different team at home. Mm-hmm. They play really well at home. They dictate terms at home.
Yes.
And I think if they can come in here and win one of these first two games, they're going to win the series.
I think that's fair analysis.
It's an expert analysis.
I'll say it's more expert than mine.
Elliot Friedman, is there anything that you want to promote to the good people of the MVSW podcast?
No, I don't like to promote anything. I would just like to say that...
Hey, what'd you think of Merrick's work in Red Deer?
I thought he did a great job.
He did a great job, right?
Yes, yes. I just can't believe that he could go to that place and not drink. I don't understand how you can do that. And they got one more game, but you know what? I don't like to promote anything. I just want to say I hope we have a good series.
I think so, too.
You know, in Canada, it hasn't been easy because we have no Canadian teams.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this, the hockey's been good.
Will they watch this?
I think they will.
Would they have watched this over any other combination of
I think they,
teams?
I think, that, you know, it's funny. Like, I've asked our guys, like, what U.S. teams do well.
Yeah.
And, you know, Pittsburgh's, the original six do well. Like, Chicago does well. And,
yeah.
But, and Rangers. But Pittsburgh
and Philly both probably do pretty well.
They do well.
Yeah.
Detroit. But Pittsburgh, Crosby. I think Crosby going for the cup. Game seven did a good number
mm-hmm.
for us, so we were encouraged by that. But I think Crosby going for the cup will do good numbers.
And does the San Jose-ness of it counteract the Thornton Marlowe of it as far
no,
as the interest?
I, you know what? I think people, at the end of the day, they're curious about who wins the cup.
Yeah.
I do think they are. And, you know, Thornton has become, as we talked about earlier, has become a bit of a heroic figure in Canada.
I think
people want to see him do well.
Yeah.
So I don't look at it as the San Jose-ness of it. I look at it as, you know, they're in the cup final. You know, Thornton, especially now Thornton getting named Team Canada, I think there will be interest.
Brilliant.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks a lot to Elliot for taking the time out to talk to me during Media Day. And he's always the best. He's a very sweet man, and we always appreciate his time. Here's an update on this very podcast that I probably should have told you off the top of the show. My magic radio box is busted. I think it may be the power source. I ordered one from the Tyline company, and I expected to get it before... I shoved off for finals coverage. It never arrived, and I don't think it's arrived yet. So a little bit of limbo there. Maybe Jeffy and I can hook up and do a little phone thing. But that, combined with Jeffy doing his thing in Red Deer for the Memorial Cup, he did an amazing job during that tournament, has sort of a little bit of a monkey wrench in the gears as far as us hooking up and doing a podcast. So wanted to make sure that we got one out before the final, and luckily was able to grab some time with Elliot to do one here on site. So as soon as that tech thingy gets fixed, me and Merrick back on the stick, no worries there. Got a lot to talk about. Got a lot to talk about, including, I'm sure, his various tales of road life during the Memorial Cup in Red Deer. As it was, as it was put to me, it's a good tournament, and Jeffy was good at doing it, so good on him. As far as what's coming up on Puck Daddy for the final, no chats. Chats are dead. Partially because Everybody uses Twitter and Facebook and other applications to now chat away during a game to get that second screen experience. The numbers for the chats had been sort of like steadily declining. And then on top of that, for whatever reason, there's a bunch of idiots in our chats who decide to like create fake names and spoof people. And so some of the people that really love to come to Puck Daddy for those chats just stop coming because I know, shocker, this is going to really shock you, but some people that read Yahoo are kind of dicks. Actually, some people who write for Yahoo are kind of dicks, as I look in the mirror here. So there's that. But on Puck Daddy this week, instead of chats, we're going to do some live blogging that's going to incorporate video and GIFs and on-site reporting and things like that. It should be fun. And then also, Leahy and I will be doing pregame shows on Facebook Live on the Yahoo Canada site. You can find it through the Puck Daddy site on Facebook. Where he and I will be breaking down the games before the games and streaming it on Facebook Live. So do check that out. That should be a lot of fun, too. And as per usual, like Leahy and I on site at the games, fighting over the temperature of the room and eating trail mix, which is as we are wont to do. Anyways, that's MVSW for this Memorial Day. Thanks to all who serve and all who have served, obviously, here in the States. And I hope everybody had a nice, enjoyable weekend. I did not, because the NHL decided to start all this nonsense on a holiday weekend. I hope my friends enjoyed their barbecue. I hope my daughter had a great weekend as Daddy had to go cover the hockey match. And, oh, by the way, my kid lost her all of her front teeth. Like, they're all baby teeth. If you looked at the picture, you'd be like, oh my God, what, did some kid slugger in kindergarten? But no, she lost all of her front teeth. It is one of the best hockey smiles I've ever seen. I'm so proud of this kid right now. She's definitely making it work. And I cannot wait to see her again and have her eat corn on the cob just to see what it looks like. Because that's the kind of dad I am. Anyways, thanks everybody for listening. Back ASAP, probably tomorrow at the earliest for more MVSW coverage of the final. New Puck Soup this week, too, over on Nerdist with Doc Emmerich as the special guest, so that should be fun. And thanks, everybody. Sharks in six. Congratulations, Penguins, because I don't ever pick winners. Bye. Beep, beep, beep.